Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. And we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffeehouse Shots, The Spectator's daily politics podcast. I'm Cindy Yu and I'm joined by Katie Bors and James Forsyth. So as the summer gets underway, you might be thinking about where you want to go. If you're brave enough to leave the country, well, don't go to Spain. That's the message sent by the government's quarantine policy over the weekend. Katie, unfortunately, Grant Shapps is in Spain.
Yes, and he's decided to stay there and just self-quarantine on return. Someone quite optimistic said to me, well, it might be that the quarantine is lifted by the time his holiday is finished. I don't think that's necessarily going to be the case. But I think this weekend, the decision to impose that quarantine with very little notice, he had to land by midnight, effectively on the Sunday. Kate Andrews, our colleague, made it back just in time.
Last plane
out of Spain. But, you know, it's a matter of about 4 hours and that person would have to, you know, go into self-isolation. So I think the lack of notice and the fact that tourists weren't told, look, you have 12 hours to get out of this country, means that you're hearing a lot of horror stories today of, you know, annoyed Brits abroad or those who are landing, who suddenly look at all the plans they've had, whether that is to go to work or go to a wedding, a 30-person wedding, various things which now they can't do. So I think it's clearly created a backlash, but I did think it was interesting that Dominic Raab on the Sunday show tour, which I think is at the moment just one show because others are off, making the point that the government is not going to apologise for this. And I think that does set the tone, which is, they are now suggesting it is a risky thing to choose to go on holiday abroad. The first priority here is to be cautious and stop the spread of coronavirus, keep it under control. So if you are someone who has booked a holiday abroad, as I think there are at least two people in this room, almost that is on you. You need to make that choice. Now, I think that's one thing to consumers, but I think it does feed into another factor here, which is we're heading to a situation where the furlough scheme is being wound down. And the idea was that the air bridges was supposed to give the travel industry and the tourism industry a chance to get back on its feet. I think this is just a reminder that that is just so hard to do in the current climate and probably is going to be for some time. And I think that lots of people are just not going to book holidays if they're not sure what's going to happen. I think it's a different question in terms of if you go on a holiday you've already booked, though the news suggests, you know, people are already trying to cancel certain holidays. But I think in terms of the economic picture, I think it is just another reminder of how hard it is to get back to any form of normality. And yes, it might be air bridges now, but Boris Johnson has said repeatedly he's happy to roll back the easing of lockdown if the data suggests they need to. I think this is a reminder that we could see other things in the country roll back pretty quickly if things don't work.
James, what do you make of the way that the government implemented this? Surely on one hand, I mean, they do have to do it pretty quickly because the situation is so fast moving. On the other hand, they have to balance business and consumer confidence.
I think the issue is the way in which the air bridges were presented originally. It was the summer holiday is back, you can go abroad if you want to. It was a very different in tone from what Katie was describing, which is, there is which is that, you know, it would be one thing if you said to people, yeah, go abroad if you want to, but it's at your own risk. Instead, it was a kind of fanfare of, you know, we've negotiated these deals, you can now fly out and go on holiday. I think that's what sticks in the craw for people. I think in a way, having the government was always going to be fast on these things. Having, you know, the big Labour criticism of the Keir Starmer criticism is, you know, government has been slow on this, slow on that. And Boris Johnson on Friday kind of acknowledged some of that when he said that they didn't realise early enough the kind of severity of the disease in his interview with Laura Koonsberg, and, you know, it indicated that he was open to the idea that they should have locked down earlier than they did. And I think you always overcorrect after an error like that, if you think it was an error, if you see what I mean. There's obviously a debate about whether voluntary social distancing was reducing the R rate anyway, very rapidly, even before the lockdown came in. So I think that is the problem. I think there is also another challenge here, which is, in some ways, with both this and the local lockdown, this is the relatively easy part of it because the furlough scheme is still in place. What is going to become much more of a challenge is that come the winter, all of these restrictions, you know, these schemes are not going to be in place. And I mean, then it's much more of an ask on people to say, okay, you need to now self-isolate for 2 weeks, or this particular town, essentially your economy is going into hibernation for until we get the coronavirus cases down. I mean, that is the challenge. And I think you see opinion in government is obviously shifting on what's going to happen. You know, a few weeks ago, you had Boris Johnson suggesting that in November he hoped that all social distancing measures might be gone. Then you had him saying on Friday that this country will be fighting disease until this time next year. Chris Whitty is being kind of quite clear that he doesn't think that you'll be giving the all clear till kind of March, April time. So I think all of these challenges lie ahead, and this is the big question is, how do you get through the winter, and how do you find a way to not have a kind of nationwide furlough scheme, but to offer sufficient support for people that they are prepared to self-isolate for 2 weeks when necessary, or, as they broadly appear to have done in Leicester, to obey a local lockdown without saying, right, I'm going to get in my car and go somewhere else.
James, on that point of more tough times to come, we were talking on this podcast when the Leicester lockdown was starting that the government should be paying for businesses that have to continue to be closed. But that doesn't seem to have happened in Leicester. So is the government thinking about that for future local lockdowns?
Look, I mean, the government's actions so far have been based on a fairly simple idea, which is when the government tells you you've got to close or you can't work, the government should step in and offer essentially compensation for that. I think it'd be quite hard to avoid doing that with some of these local lockdowns. You know, I think there is an interesting question about how you balance this out, you know, what level of support you are expected to give people. But I think it's going to be very hard to maintain public consent for these local lockdowns if people are expected to just shut their business for a month without, you know, any compensation.
I think particularly because I was speaking to someone in government about this, about local lockdowns, saying, oh, it's interesting that polling actually suggests that the public do back local lockdowns as an idea. Because when it first came about, I think you saw at one point Labour almost trying to attack the government, suggesting this wasn't like a tenable strategy in the long term to have local lockdowns. Now it seems as though actually people are quite prepared for that, if that means you get to live with it. So I was saying, oh, well, that's good, the public back. And they said, well, that's if you don't live in Leicester or Blackburn. Now, even with all the support packages, I think that it is quite easy for us to forget that there are, you know, there's a large number of people who are not able to go to the pub, not able to see their friends, might be able to see their friends, but, you know, not able to socialise much particularly, and not able to get about their daily lives or go out in some cases earn a living. Now, they might be getting the financial package for that, but I think there is a high level of discontent in those places. So I think if you add that to the fact that you might not have the full package, I think it's going to get very difficult indeed.
And Katie, today the government has launched officially its campaign against obesity, which we talked about on the podcast on Friday. It seems that the Tory MPs haven't so far had a backlash, but business groups have, such as the British Food and Drink Confederation.
So I think in terms of the obesity strategy generally, Boris Johnson's strategy consists of a few different things. Lots of people said, oh, he's a hypocrite. Look at his history of rallying against the nanny state. And I definitely think he has had that conversion. But while it is, you know, changing tack on, you know, no more buy one, get one free, looking at advertising online, the things that he specifically criticised, if we go most recently to the Tory leadership election, so, you know, stealth taxes, you're not fully there. Do you know, I still think if you look at the package of what they're doing, particularly the idea that GPs take on more of an active role, it's not a complete full circle, but it clearly is something where he has now decided intervention is a good thing to do. You're also getting people criticising the strategy because we are now 1 week away, in case people are trying to make their bookings to eat out, to help out, the month in which the Treasury have urged us to do our civic duty and go to various eateries, probably places, you know, like Pizza Express, Nando's, potentially McDonald's. There's a scale here in terms of health level to basically put money back into the economy. We're a consumption-based society and encourage people to do that by eating out. Now, there are some who say, how do the two comply? Now, I don't think they completely oppose each other, but I think it is a little bit tricky personally when you are talking about limiting buy one get one free and so forth, when you're also looking at some of the restaurants which are going to be included in this scheme. Now, I still think this government is one that trusts people to have common sense and people to make their own judgments, so it is possible to have an incentive or a cheaper way to go to a fast food restaurant while also telling people to be careful about their weight. I think the government thinks people can hold both thoughts in their head, but it isn't probably the cleanest, you know, fortnight to have both those messages going out.
James, stuff like the sugar tax and bans on junk food advertising have been talked about for years now. Now that the Prime Minister is behind this initiative, do you think it's actually going to go ahead? Like, this is not going to be one of those false alarms from before?
Yeah, I think it will, because I think also you look at the effects, you look at the stats about the UK and the percentage of the population that is obese, and it is quite clear that we as a country have a problem with this. And also because of the way we choose to run our healthcare system, it's not just individuals who end up bearing the consequences of the fact that they are overweight or obese. It imposes costs on the country too via the health service. So I think you are going to see a push to try and go with this stuff. And because I think, you know, there are clearly kind of negative externalities to people being obese. And, you know, that is a shift. I also think the other thing is Boris Johnson's own personal story on this, I think, gives him permission to be heard on it in two ways. One, if you look at the kind of video they've done, I thought it was interesting on the weekend, you had Matt Hancock jogging around St James's Park.
It reminded me of Katie's anecdote on Friday's podcast of him running up the stairs.
Yeah, looking kind of very svelte. And then you had kind of Boris Johnson giving kind of video with the dog pulling him along this morning. And it's, I think it's easier for the public to take the message from Boris Johnson, because Boris Johnson is clearly someone who has struggled with his own weight in a way that Matt Hancock, who kind of drops a stone and a half for a horse race at the drop of a hat, hasn't. And then I think the second thing is, if Boris Johnson has moved off his libertarian position on this, I think the reasons, the personal reasons, you know, the fact he was obese when he, to be brutal about it, when he went into intensive care, I think that means that, you know, you're not going to see that many Tory MPs as you might have done previously come out and say, oh, this is absurd nannying, don't do this. So I think that those two factors mean that I think this is probably going to trap, you know, there will be more of this junk food advertising, all that kind of stuff. You know, I think they will stay the course on that.
And Katie, finally, the Guardian's front page today speculates that the government has plans to solve social care by levying a tax burden on over 40s. Can you tell us more about this story?
Yes, so this is the idea of having almost an insurance-style system, but you would pay higher contributions from the age of 40 onwards when you're more likely to have a sizable income, you would hope. I think that it's interesting because I think in one place they've said, oh, you know, a Department of Health official has suggested this is a story based in fiction. But I do think that actually, of all the options they are looking at, one which is a bit like having, you know, something you pay into and almost like an insurance style arrangement is one that is favoured by a lot of Tories and ministers. It's really difficult to come up with a solution to social care, as we know, hence why we just haven't come up with one since the snap election, where it almost did for Theresa May. So the 2017 one, Boris Johnson said that he had a solution, or he was going to soon announce a solution when he first became Prime Minister. And yet in the most recent election, it was really skated over. They said that they would be proposing something, but there weren't any details of what exactly it would be. But I think there is a sense that it can't just be on, you know, the state, and also in the current way it is, it can't just be similar to the NHS. I think they want to have its own funding model towards it, rather than getting eaten up or put in that as well, because it will create too much strain.
James, obviously, as Katie says, social care is a Gordian knot that no one has managed to cut through. So is this sort of insurance system, if it was true, was this the thing that cuts through?
So I think one of the successes of recent years has been the auto-enrolment in workplace pensions. It's sufficiently small, but people don't notice the money going out of their paycheck in particular. And yet it has basically massively boosted the savings rate in terms of retirement and pensions. I mean, there's a case for doing something similar with social care. There's also, I think, another issue here, which is in terms of generational fairness, obviously this is related to planning, which I think the government is one of the things the government hopes to do more of over the summer. What you really want to do is get to a situation where people have got on the property ladder before they're 40, and then that money that they had previously been saving towards a deposit for a house can start being saved, you know, being put towards social care. And it shouldn't actually be as much as what they need to save every month to get a deposit for a house, because of the way the system would work. But I think you need something that touches on this point of generational fairness, because, you know, particularly in the post-coronavirus world, young people are having a hard enough time as it is without taxing them more to pay for social care for their elders.
James and Katie, thanks very much, and thanks for joining us this episode. Do join us again tomorrow.
Get 12 weeks of The Spectator in print and online for just £12. and we'll give you a £20 Amazon gift voucher, absolutely free. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.